This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Rich Bradbury here in the studio with
Jeff Sandu.
Priya Liu.
Talking about toxic work environments here, we've been talking about a company called Away from the US who essentially sell luggages direct to the consumer, but say that they offer a travel experience. That's how they're marketing themselves. Turns out that the startup, doing very well, but of course had created this environment of toxicity where people were uncomfortable. A whole bunch of staff members left. The CEO was extremely mean to a lot of people, to the point where she has since come out and apologized after this article was published, and has since been replaced by a new CEO. The former COO of Lululemon, Stuart Haselden, has stepped into her space to make sure things keep running smoothly over and away. Do we have any more messages to refer to?
I've got one here from M. I think universities' academic work environments can become toxic if they forget about the actual function of university and start chasing rankings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep the messages coming in, folks. 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, Twitter or Instagram at BFM Radio. Let's move on to the next story.
Yeah. So sustainable finance is, I guess, like a big buzzword in the financial institutions, especially moving forwards in 2020. So sustainable finance basically refers to any form of financial services integrating environmental, social and governance, or ESG, which you may have seen in many pamphlets and buntings and brochures in any events that you go to recently. So they have to actually integrate these kind of areas into their business or investments decisions for the lasting benefit of both the clients and the society at large. So a sustainable financial center is a financial marketplace that as a whole contributes to a sustainable development and value creation in economic and environmental and social terms. So in other words, one that ensures and improves economic efficiency, prosperity and economic competitiveness both today and in the long term, while also contributing to protecting and restoring ecological systems and enhancing cultural diversity and social well-being. So why are we sort of like talking about sustainable finance is because one is sustainable finance can be confusing as there are many few standard definitions, and then different countries look at it differently. But being a more sustainable economy will be a key in the next decade, especially in sustainable finance. So it should really be a forefront for the finance sector, and this is because in recent news, Malaysian's banks are among the top financers of forest risk companies in Indonesia, including those that are being investigated for the forest fires that afflicted the country this year. This is according to an international group of environmental NGOs, which estimated that Malaysian banks had been channeling about $2.35 billion, which is about 9.77 billion ringgit, since 2015 up to August 2019 of this year, to 17 companies implicated in the recent fires that we've all experienced. We all woke up and, you know, we all basically just started blaming Indonesia, right?
We got sick as well.
A lot of us. So this, according to this report, it makes Malaysian banks the third largest lender to companies that have been issued stop work orders by the Indonesian Environment and Forestry Ministry pending investigations over the this year's fire. So by jurisdiction, the largest creditors are mainland China banks with about 24.2 billion ringgit, followed by Indonesian banks, which is about 18.8 billion ringgit. Taiwanese banks are also involved. They are the fourth largest creditor, and Singaporean banks are ranked fifth. So this is this figures basically account for lending and underwriting these banks have made to the companies who are forest risk commodities units, and also, you know, it's the company as the whole. hold itself. So this is defined as the company subsidiaries that operate upstream activities of the palm oil, paper and pulp, rubber and timber industries. So this report was released just today by the US-based Rainforest Action Network, or RAN. The Netherlands-based Profundo and Indonesia environmental NGOs took Indonesia, Jaka Lahari and Walhi. So we thought on Enterprise Biz Bytes, you know, we want to sort of figure out, like, how does it actually work in terms of grants and funds, and what kind of checks and balances systems are in place when these loopholes, you know, and what sort of loopholes there are there in these processes, right? So we got in touch with Baiza Bain. He's from Ficus Capital Venture. And we asked him, like, you know, Baiza, what is the typical process for an organization to receive grants or funds from a financial institution in Malaysia?
Okay, typically, you would have to prepare a complete proposal that will specifically mention in detail the proposed use of the funds and what the proposed outcome will be. For the grants, financial institutions would usually have a in the form of areas that they would like their funds to be utilized in. Most financial institutions in Malaysia usually provide grants in sectors such as education, community development, and humanitarian causes. On the other hand, when giving out funds for commercial purposes, the proposal will be evaluated on its economic viability and potential risk to the financial institution. The sectors and industries that will be covered actually will be more diverse when compared to the ones covered in the grant. After a proposal is received, there are usually several layers of approvals that need to be sought. First and foremost, technical and legal due diligence on the proposal and its intended recipient. Secondly, in the case of grants, you would have to pass a grant committee that will evaluate your proposal. Usually for financial institutions, it consists of external experts that's appointed by the financial institution, because most officers within a financial institution may not understand the areas in which the grants will be disbursed into. So they will appoint third-party experts. But in the case of funds to be used commercially, usually, you know, in the banks, they will have a deal committee that will vet all the deals on a preliminary basis. After that, the deal goes to a risk committee that will evaluate all potential risks to the financial institution. In this case, they look at specifically business risk and reputational risk. After the risk committee has done its evaluation, it goes to an investment committee. Investment committee will scrutinize the deal in its entirety, looking at whether the deal suits the direction of the business that the bank wants to go into. And then the final approval for any deals coming out of the bank will lie with the board of directors of the particular bank.
So, Baiza, how do these financial institutions ensure that they have the right checks and balances in place for their investments?
In the case of the grant committee will set specific milestones that needs to be met for the disbursement of the grant. Grants are never disbursed in total at one go. It's disbursed on a milestone-by-milestone basis. This allows for the financial institution to control the usage of the funds. In the case of funds, the financial institution usually will dictate that investee or the recipient submit a report on a monthly basis. There will also be supervision by specific officers at the financial institution that reports directly to the board of directors.
So is it right for financial institutions to sort of be held accountable in some degree to the actions of the organizations that misuse their funds?
Technically, I think when you put your name to a cause or a venture, there will have to be some accountability on your part. But as I explained above, the approval process at financial institutions is very tight. I think most misuse of funds came as a result of the rogue actions on the part of the recipients. I think for financial institutions, it was never the intention on their part for their funds to be misused. So in my opinion, when there is significant damage that's discovered resulting from the use of these funds, the financial institutions need to take proactive measures to help rectify the issues, because at the end of the day, when you put your name to something and, you know, there is issues as a result of it. But I think having play a proactive role will help to mitigate any risk that you will have in terms of your reputation.
So what typically happens when there is a misuse of funds?
Okay, for financial institutions, everything has to be in black and white, obviously. Prior to disbursing grants and funds, all institutions, all financial institutions will sign a very thorough contract with the intended recipients, whether grant or commercial funds. And there are clauses in this contract that allows for financial institutions to seek rectifications. For example, in the form of grants, you know, they can stop all future disbursements, and then they can recall the funds that's already disbursed. They can also compel recipients to pay hefty penalty for non-compliance to the contract. And last but not least, they can also make the recipients bear all the costs and make rectifications for any issues caused as a result of their actions when using the fund. So it's pretty, the contract is pretty clear-cut in the sense that, you know, even though either it's a grant contract or a commercial contract, it protects the financial institutions legally from any misuse of their funds.
Thank you, Baiza. That was Baiza Bain from Ficus Capital Venture. And basically, so from that, there are many layers, there are many checks and balances and risk assessments and governments, I guess governance assurance in place that, you know, something like this doesn't happen. But, you know, according to this report, this has happened. So, you know, sometimes it is the humans that are the flaw in the system. So the processes can't really save you if you just refuse to adhere to best practices, right? Mm. So, you know, to quote Michael Jackson, sometimes you just got to look at the man in the mirror, right? Because, you know, when that happened, we all, you know, stood up and like, oh, you know, we blamed other countries. But clearly there are, I guess, you know, many more areas that we can improve on ourselves to stop from this happening in 2020. Because the last thing we would want to see is another haze incident in the year 2020.
And I guess there is some recourse, like where they can, you know, get their money back and that sort of thing, you know. So well, these banks, if they're serious, should look at how they can, you know, do the right thing.
Yeah. Right.
It happens, right? I mean, money laundering, you know, all these things do happen. You know, we got a big case.
And also, we have been approaching to all banks, so we will be getting their responses and stuff. So the Morning Run crew is covering this. The Evening Edition will be covering this as well. So I guess, you know, just stay tuned for more updates on what our responses will be like.
There you go, folks. We're going to take a short break with some music coming up from the Foo Fighters with Learn to Fly. Of course, we are discussing whether or not you are part or work in a toxic work environment. Do let us know if you want to talk about that. 018-789-8899 via WhatsApp. We will keep you anonymous. Instagram or Twitter, not so anonymous, of course. We're at BFM Radio. We'll be right back with our final story of the day about the Cyber Monday boom here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.